Welcome to Whiskey Shenanigans. I'm your host, Randy Warren. Whiskey Shenanigans, where we help our listeners experience the world of whiskey, every aspect of life, as if it was accompanied by a glass of bourbon. The sports world on whiskey. Basically every part of life on whiskey. Whiskey Shenanigans is about getting exclusive interviews from Bourbon Row in Kentucky, where we can learn about the secrets that make our favorite bourbons unique. We will get inside the hearts and minds of many distillers and help you understand what and how they are achieving it. Whiskey Shenanigans is about going beyond boring podcasts featuring just tastings. Heck, what do you get out of that anyway? It's about bringing on guests and experiencing the entire world through whiskey. But be warned, if you're diving in and you want to participate in these riveting discussions, you will need to grab a glass or a dram and be prepared to be entertained. You know, I was talking to a guy who's running a distillery in Southwest California. And I'm like, okay, so where are you getting your grains from? And they're doing, he said, Bloody Butcher Red, coming from Texas.
Okay.
Texas. I've tried the whiskey in Texas, and I didn't think a whole lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a, I think there's a few of them that have figured out that they don't need to try and make Kentucky bourbon in Texas. They need to figure out how to make good Texas whiskey. And there's a few of them. I think Barcones were well on that path, but those who are trying to copy what we do in Texas, it just doesn't work. Sorry.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Yeah, the temperatures and everything, the aging profiles, and it's just different. But let's get into Heaven Hill. I mean, you know, what our listeners, you know, when we do a podcast, this is not the podcast, but when we do a podcast, what we're kind of looking for is we want to give you exposure. We want to give you visibility. We want to get your story out there. We want our listeners to hear about what you're doing, especially in regards to innovation and things like that. But we got to cover the basics too. You know, like you guys, especially, you have a lot of different brands. And, you know, so I would ask you first probably about, you know, not the differences between them, but kind of how do I distinguish if I'm walking into a bar or a shop? How do I distinguish which one I want of all these different ones?
Well, that's one of the beautiful things about our portfolios. You know, if you're at all interested in American whiskey, we got something for you. I know a lot of people are off put by, oh my God, it's whiskey, it's high proof, it's this, it's that, it's the other. Well, we can really go down the rabbit hole here, but you know, one of the first things that I would do in that scenario is offer them Larceny, one of our wheated bourbons. It's, you know, 20% wheat and 68% corn. It's just a lovely, soft, easy drinking, very approachable bourbon. It, you know, it mixes well, like makes a great mule. So it's a nice gateway bourbon, if you will.
Yeah.
But then if you're in any way familiar at all with American whiskeys, I mean, I'll stack any of ours up against the competition, you know. And I'm at Heaven Hill Springs Distillery, a new distillery down here in Bardstown, and we have really nice visitor center where you can come and take a tour. It's a wonderful bar, and I happened to be down there with Caitlin, as a matter of fact, and there were some visitors coming in, and they, you know, as usual, somebody asked you, what's your favorite? And you know, I don't necessarily have my favorite Heaven Hill product is the one I happen to be drinking right now, but they had just purchased a bottle of the Heaven Hill 7-year-old bottle and bond. And realistically, that is the one that I'm, I guess, most proud of. It speaks really nicely to our legacy, Heaven Hill's 90-year legacy, who we are, how we make whiskey, what we stand for. It's an age-stated bottle and bond. One of, you know, there are very, very few age-stated bottle and bonds out there. We just happen to have, off the top of my head, I think at least four of them. But that's part of our DNA, part of how we do business.
Why is it that you have so many and most people don't? Why is that?
Well, it goes back. So Heaven Hill was founded in 1935. approximately 38 years after the Bottle and Bond Act was passed. And, you know, they were founded right as Prohibition was had ended and, you know, people were trying to come to terms with the post-Prohibition era. And, you know, the five Shapiro brothers invested in a fledgling distillery and ultimately became owners of it. And, you know, even, you know, 38 years after the passing of the Bottle and Bond Act and, you know, post-Prohibition, the Bottle and Bond moniker still carried a lot of cachet for quality and attention to detail and patience and perseverance and all that. So when they started Heaven Hill Distillery in 1935, they made the decision, we're going to wait 4 years to bring out a Bottle and Bond product and kind of hang our hat on quality right from the get-go. And that's just been part of our DNA ever since. You know, one of my good friends and colleagues, Bernie Lovers, who's our brand ambassador emeritus, he's got the fanciest title in the company. He even has a big Bottle and Bond tattoo on his arm, but he's kind of credited with, you know, being, you know, the savior of the Bottle and Bond category because he knew what it stood for, could tell the story as good, could just really proclaim it, and of course lean into Heaven Hill's portfolio of bonded products. And, you know, the rest of the world eventually listened to him, and now you look across there, there are a lot more bonded products now than there used to be, and we still have a ton of them.
So you were saying about stacking up your products against everything else out there. So what would you say Old Fitz 7 Year stacks up to?
That's a really good one. So Old Fitz 7 is, let me give you some background on that. So it's wheat and bourbon, it's the same mash bill as Larceny. Old Fitz is one of the grand old brands of American whiskey. I mean, it's been around since the 1800s. And of course, Pappy Van Winkle kind of put it on the map. And when we acquired the Bernheim Distillery in 99, we acquired the brand at that time. By that time, it kind of lost its reputation. So we took it off the market for a while and brought it back in the Decanter series, which we bring out typically twice a year, sometimes three times a year. It's another age state of the Bottle and Bond. And if you ever look at the reviews of that, I mean, the reviews are always, you know, of course, they're always glowing. But in the commentary section, they would always say, you would get, invariably have someone say, oh, great, another whiskey I'll never get to taste. Because it is one of our unicorns. It's because it's HCA, the Bottle and Bond Decanter. It's very, it's a very low volume. LTO, I guess, is the proper phrase for it. So we listen to our consumers, as you know, Heaven Hill has the reputation for doing. And like, how can we make Old Fitz more available to everybody? And, you know, it hadn't been that long since we brought out the 7-year-old Bottle and Bond Heaven Hill. And so we, you know, that we came up with the idea to do that. And, you know, it's a gorgeous package. And of course, the whiskey is amazing. So what would that stack up against? I mean, there's not a lot of bonded wheated bourbons out there. But, you know, if somebody, you know, knew Larceny or some of the other wheated bourbons out there and wanted to kind of up the game somewhat to, you know, again, the number of age-stated bonded whiskeys out there is very, very low. It's probably less than 1% of the total American whiskey population that's out there. So, you know, by law and by availability, these are some of the rarest whiskeys available. But we just happen to make them available to everybody. So if you're looking to up your game, kind of go sophisticated a little bit, if you're used to paying too much money for something that maybe had some cachet as being a sophisticated high-end bourbon, and you like that wheated profile, I mean, Old Fitz is the perfect vehicle for that. Because again, I think it retails for $60-ish, and it's on every shelf, and you don't have to stand in line at 3 a.m. in the driving snow to hopefully get one. And again, at 100 proof, it stands up to cocktails, but yet it's wheated, so you can easily drink it on the rocks, and it just opens up beautifully.
Right. So it's creamy, it's smooth, it's a little sweet, but it's got some age to it, right? It's a little bit structured, bit oaky, maybe even.
Oaky tends to have strong connotations, but it doesn't have those tannins, but it's got those lovely like oak sweetness, I think is a nice way to put it. Like the vanillins, butterscotches that tend to come from the barrel and the char and stuff. But again, for any whiskey aficionado, it's layered, it's complex, it kind of checks all the boxes. But again, for a newbie coming in who's trying to expand their palate, trying to expand their portfolio, it's that level up from just a kind of an everyday.
What do you want people to think about the comparison between Elijah Craig and Evan Williams?
So going back to starting from scratch. So at the distillery, my day job, if you will, is to manage the operations at Heaven Hill Springs, where I'm sitting now, a brand new distillery. We've been in production for a year. And the other distillery, the Bernheim Distillery in Louisville, the world's largest single-site bourbon distillery, it's important to note that the distilleries don't make brands. We make styles of whiskey. So we make New Make Whiskey. We have six different styles of whiskey we make, one of which is bourbon with rye. On the production schedule in-house, we call that HH Reg. It's Heaven Hill Regular. And it's 78% corn, 10% rye, and 12% malt. Very traditional bourbon mash bill. It accounts for probably 85% of what we make. We put it in the new charred white oak barrels. We put it away in the warehouses. We go into our whole warehouse strategy. We have 70 warehouses. We have over 2 million barrels aging. And as those styles of whiskey age out, then, we like to say we let the whiskey tell us when it's ready. Now, HH Reg, we do, we, at 4 years old, 100 proof, it's Evan Williams Bottle and Bond. We don't age state the Evan Black Label, but it's typically 4.5 to 5.5 years old, 86 proof. We have 1783 small batch. We have single barrel. You can taste all those. They all start out the exact same way, and you can see how different they are. And I know when I'm talking to some of our fans, it's amazing how people have, they are like dedicated fans of Evan Williams 1783. They're dedicated fans of Evan Williams single barrel. And then, when we age it 8+ years and bottle it 94 proof, it becomes, we bottle that as Elijah Craig. And again, you can taste them separately together. And they are clearly rye-based bourbons. You could call them cousins, I guess, but they're not the same whiskey. And, the reason I hesitated when you asked the question was like, I've never had anyone like really say this versus that. Usually the way, when I explain what I just explained to you there about styles of whiskey and maturation and batch size and all that, people are amazed stuff like, oh, you're, very transparent and honest about this. Other distilleries, as far as I can tell, they got one mash bill and they just spin it into different stories. And, again, that's another hallmark of Heaven Hill is our transparency, our authenticity. And I think it shows up in, the variety and quality of our whiskeys as well.
Yeah. Well, it's a question that I've had as a consumer on my mind. Like when I walk into the store, I'm like, this one or this one, they're similar, but different. So which one do I want to go with at which point in time? If I want something a little more rye or a little more spicy or something like that, I might go with one. If I want something a little more creamy, I go with another one.
Try all.
Well, I'm in the process of trying them all. I haven't tried them all yet, but I did try this one.
Sticks, and it's signed by Jody. That's nice.
Jody, yep. So I was in Kentucky about 1 year ago, and I stopped in the Evan Williams Experience, And Jody toured me around, and he was the very first podcast we ever did.
How about that? Well, Jody, I'm a big fan of Jody and everything they do at the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience. And it just shows you, again, brag on Heaven Hill. I mean, between Bernheim and Springs, we can make 2,000 barrels a day. Jody makes one barrel a day. And he makes it on, pot stills with a rectifying section on top. And it's just another flex we have in whiskey making. And you've got Square Six there. And it's, it really harkens back to, like, Evan Williams was a real person. He was a Welshman who set up a distillery, Kentucky's first licensed distillery, in 1783 on the banks of the Ohio and right next to where the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience sits right now. So it's great history and connotation there. And again, it speaks to, the legacy of bourbon in Kentucky, the legacy of Heaven Hill in bourbon, and all kind of ties up nicely together.
Yeah. So when you when you're thinking about all your brands and all the different taste profiles, you're kind of segregating them a little bit by taste profile as opposed to by top shelf, second shelf, third shelf, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. I don't remember if I said it earlier, like my day job is to make consistently high quality new make whiskey. If we make, me and the teams at the distilleries, if we make consistently high quality new make whiskey, the odds of it coming out of the barrel 4 years, 8 years, 20 years later are, basically even very, very high odds that, you put good whiskey in a good barrel and age it the right way, you're going to get good whiskey out of it. So there are days when I'll drink Miller Corn, and it's just a lovely light whiskey, and we sell it for, $19, something like that. And it's a 4-year-old bottle and bond, There are days when I have an Ale Heritage Collection. The most recent one we brought out was 22 years old. And you just want to sit there and kind of reflect on, 22 years. And the fact that it still tastes this amazingly good is another testament to all the cool stuff that Heaven Hill can do. And again, I'm Heaven Hill's seventh master distiller in our 90 years. And the legacy that all my predecessors, especially Parker Beam, built, and the institutional knowledge we have, and the variety of warehouses we have, and everybody else on the team who, is part of, the great whiskeys we make and the Heaven Hill legacy and all the cool things that Heaven Hill get to do.
Absolutely. There's a lot more age statements going on, it seems like, these days. Is that a trend?
It's hard to say, really. Inside the Heaven Hill bubble, we've always had age statements. I mentioned the age state of Ball and Bonds we've had. Henry McCann, the 10-year-old, has been around for a long time. We've had Elijah 18. We've been putting big age statements on the Heritage Collection for the past 4 or 5 years. Maybe it's imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but it's kind of, again, when you look at our portfolio, putting an age statement on something kind of locks you in. And you're kind of stuck there. And the history of Elijah Craig, when it came out first, it had this bourbon's 12 years old on it. And very quickly it outpaced our capacity or the aging volume of 12-year-olds. Like, oh shit, what do we do now? Well, we have tons and tons and tons of stuff that's 8 to 12 years old, so let's make it 8 to 12 years old and make it broadly available and allow it to grow to, it's still one of the fastest growing premium bourbons out there. So it gives us some room to maneuver, but we still bring out the higher age statement ones on it. And we just announced a 15-year-old single barrel, again, leaning into the legacy of the Elijah Craig brand. It's been around since the 80s sometime. It's got the original 12-year-old cachet that I still get asked a lot about. It's got the 18-year-old, the 21-year-old, legacy behind it. So as we look at what's in our portfolio and where we want to innovate, that's a great place to flex.
And what these other brands like Parker's Heritage and Pikesville Rye and Rittenhouse Rye, where did the name, I'm curious, because I'm from the Philadelphia area. Did Rittenhouse Rye, that name come from Philadelphia?
Yes, it did. And Pikesville came from Pikesville, Maryland. So if you look back at the history of American whiskey, there was, you know, Northeastern rye, and there was Maryland rye, and there was this rye and that rye. Well, one of the things, like, as the decades went by and, you know, American whiskey kind of fell out of favor in the 70s and 80s, these brands closed, and some of them literally called Max Shapiro and asked him to, you know, to purchase the brand and take care of it. So that's how we got Pikesville, and that's how we got Rittenhouse. We have three, everyday rye whiskeys. Rittenhouse, 4 years old, bonded. We have Pikesville, 6 years old, 110 proof, and we have Elijah Craig rye that's same age range as the Elijah Craig bourbon and also 94 proof. Again, going back to what we make at the distillery, we make rye whiskey. It goes in the barrels, and then at 4, 6, 8-plus years old, it becomes these brands. And, the name Pikesville is an homage to Maryland rye. It's clearly not made in Maryland anymore, but and if you look at the label on Rittenhouse, it's got a square. It looks like a diamond, but it's a square. That's a nod to Rittenhouse Square.
Right, Rittenhouse Square. I've been there many times.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. A good number of athletes from the Philadelphia, you know, different Phillies and whatnot all live over there in Rittenhouse. Really, it's one of the nicer spots in the city, downtown, really in the city.
Well, if any of them are listening, they know which rye whiskey they need to go out. But if anyone anywhere is listening, you all need to go out and buy Rittenhouse rye.
I haven't tried a Rittenhouse. I got to go out and get one now just because I'm thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my God. My God. And is it 95% rye or 100% rye?
It's 51% rye. 51% rye, 35% corn, and 14% malt. So it's just enough rye to be a rye whiskey. But it, especially if you're if your palate is attuned to bourbon, it's a nice segue in. And it doesn't, none of the three of those have kind of that overly kind of grassy, dried hay, 95.5 rye, that a lot of those 95.5 ryes have. I know the Rittenhouse rye, I travel to Denver, Chicago, whatever, to talk about the latest Parker's or the latest Heritage Collection or whatever. Bartenders always want to know, that's cool, but tell me about Rittenhouse. Really? Bartenders love Rittenhouse. They love Rittenhouse, they love Mellow Corn, because they make great cocktails. They're 100 proof, they're 4 years old, so they're going to stand up in a cocktail. They're not ridiculously expensive. So if you're a bar owner, you can start generating some serious cash out of a bottle of Rittenhouse.
Right. So the Rittenhouse is ages round four, you're saying?
Right. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And then the Parker's goes up to eight?
The Pikesville is six, and it's 110 proof. And then the Elijah Craig rye is 94 proof. And we don't age state that, but it's typically around 8 years old.
Around eight. Wow. Fantastic. That's a great lineup. You guys have all the bases covered, man.
You sure do. And so one of the, you know, I referenced Bernie Lovers earlier. One of the great lines he uses is, so we've got some unicorns. You know, we got Old Fitz, we got Parker's, we got the Heritage Collection. We got stuff that people literally do line up all night for. And thank you very much to anyone who's that passionate. I tip my hat to you. But as Bernie likes to say, when you're climbing the shelf to reach the unicorn on top, look down, look at all the gold bricks you're tripping over on the way up the shelf. Yeah. So no matter where you are on the shelf, left to right, top to bottom, guarantee you we've got a top quality whiskey there that you don't have to write anyone for.
What would you, we're writing a book called Whiskey Rule Breakers. And where would you say that, you know, Heaven Hill is a big breaking rules out of this traditional industry or innovating out of this traditional industry?
Well, I mean, we are part of the tradition. We are one of the, you know, four or five legacy distillers that have been around since Prohibition. But we have never rested on our laurels. And again, everything I've talked about there, I mean, if you look at the competitive landscape, I mean, who else is making corn whiskey, bourbon with rye, bourbon with wheat, rye whiskey, wheat whiskey, every day? Like every year we make those. We've here recently, the last three, at least, years, we've been making an American single malt. And that's just our everyday stuff.
Yeah.
And then for the last, I think now 19 years, we've been bringing out Parker's Heritage Collection. That obviously is an homage to Parker Beam, the fourth master distiller and the guy who really put Heaven Hill on the map. And he had a reputation as an innovator, and that's why the Heritage Collection is always something innovative. And that's a very broadly phrased innovative. It could be a barrel finish. It could be a unique mash bill. It could be a blend of, you know, different ages, a blend of different mash bills. It could be a single maturation in a unique barrel. So from that point of view, I think Heaven Hill have been, you know, breaking the rules, breaking the laws, whatever you want to call it, but obviously staying true to our legacy. We're not about flashy or gimmicky or flash in the pan stuff. We want to, you know, we are at heart an American whiskey company with, I mean, our fan base. Like when I got this job and started going to, you know, whiskey shows and stuff like that, and people were lining up for my autograph. I was like, yesterday I was just some guy, and, you know, now you want my autograph? What's up with that? And I was like, holy crap, these are really passionate people who care about the history of Heaven Hill and importantly the whiskey and how it's made and who's making it. I was like, I better, you know, pull my socks up and behave myself here. But it was you know, humbling and exciting at the same time. But that's you know, Heaven Hill, we've been in the thick of it for 90 years.
For a long time, yeah. And speaking of that, you know, one of the other things we like to talk about on the podcast is, like, how is whiskey changing the American culture, or how is the American culture affecting whiskey?
Well, one of the things, I'm Irish. I grew up in Dublin. I got my degree in chemical engineering there. It's a long, twisty road that brought me to making whiskey, but the short version of, like, what really attracted to me, the chemical engineer, so there's a lot about engineering and process and all that. Got it. So it's plenty of science as well, but there's a lot of art, there's a lot of lore, a lot of history, and just a lot of cool stuff kind of balled up into one. Like, as an engineer, I'm not stamping widgets or just some, you know, dull wash, rinse, repeat job. One of the things that I realized is that, like, Kentucky is an ingredient. We touched on it earlier that different whiskey from different states and that type of stuff. But Kentucky is an ingredient. And when you look across the the history of Kentucky whiskey, I mean, it was influenced by the Irish and the Scotch settling here. And, you know, the first whiskeys made in the U.S. would have been, in what was to become the U.S., would have been rye whiskey. And they come across the Appalachian Mountains to this part of the world, and corn grows better than rye. So being the innovators that they were, they used what they had. And, you know, there was whiskey first before there was Kentucky, and then it became Kentucky whiskey, and then it became bourbon. And so they're all meshed into one. And I think that's part of what makes bourbon so cool, is because it is a unique product of the United States, and it's so closely associated with Kentucky, and it's such an important part of the history of the country. So I don't know, chicken or the egg, which begat which, but the bourbon boom that we've seen for the last 20 plus years has definitely had a huge influence on the culture. And the same way, the culture has had a huge impact on, you know, how we operate. I mean, the rise of the craft distillers who had the mobility or whatever you want to call it, the nimbleness to do this, to kind of throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. Believe me, we pay attention to that. It's like, what are you doing over there? Interesting. Raph, can we do that better? Yeah. Yeah, we're not chasing fads or anything like that, but there's been a lot of really cool stuff made by a lot of really cool people across the industry, and it's fun to watch. So yeah, I think it's to short answer to your question, it's very chicken and egg. Yeah,
and speaking of there's some interesting stuff. I mean, I've seen a lot of interesting things and I've tasted a lot of interesting things. Most of them aren't that good, but one that turned out pretty darn good was it had a lot of rice in it. And that's it's being made in South Carolina. And I was like,
I haven't had that one.
Burnt Church.
Like I said, about the cider was coming over here and corn grew best here. So that's what they ended up making whiskey out of. Rhino rice grows well in the Carolinas. So use what's at hand.
Use what they had. And most of these crafts, I've interviewed a lot of them, and most of them are doing exactly that. I mean, they call it bottle to grain, grain to bottle, whatever it is, whatever they're calling it. They're trying to use the local ingredients as best they can and make it as good as they can. Yeah. Some of those local ingredients turn out to be great, like, you know, this one, and other ones, not so great, you know.
Well, one of the things I've been quoted as saying is it's relatively easy to make whiskey. It's much harder to make good whiskey. And at the end of the day, we're all about making good whiskey, and whiskey that people can drink and enjoy, and they don't have to be a master taster or be able to pull out the, you know, the charred Appalachian oak or whatever it is. Rule one of tasting whiskey: are you enjoying what you're tasting? Rule two: there is no rule two. I mean, we make it to be enjoyed. Now, if you can pull out the flavor nuances, it's a really fun skill to practice and to learn.
Yeah,
but you don't have to be able to do that.
I'm still practicing and learning it all the time.
Every day.
I'm still learning my palate too. Like, because what I like keeps on changing all the time. It's like people always say, oh, you Whiskey Shenanigans podcast, what's your favorite? It's like,
well, that's what been one of the biggest changes in the business in, you know, probably in the last 30 years is that, you know, you talk about, you know, whiskey, it's not your, I guess, grandfather's drink anymore now, but, you know, that generation, they drank Jack Daniels, or they drank Evan Williams, or they drank Old Forester, and that was it. You go to the house, the only thing on the bar was the only thing they drank, and there was nothing else. Now you go to, like, anyone who's in any way interested in whiskey has 3 or 4 or 5 or 100 bottles on their bar, and they're all partly empty, which is great because they're drinking across what's out there. And like I said, there is a lot of good whiskey out there. You know, I'm going to brag on ours all day long, but there's a lot of good whiskey out there, and there's a lot of very skillful, very passionate people in big distilleries, in small distilleries, in new distilleries, in old distilleries, making great whiskey. And it's fun to drink across them and you know, see what everyone else is up to.
What do you think about in terms of innovation and with the malted barley and stuff like that? You mentioned that you're doing one, right?
Yeah. So we've been making an American single malt. We typically make it. It works out well for us that we make it in June, right before we shut down, because it takes. We typically use two types of malt, and why two? Because that's what we came up with. I can't remember if it's the oldest one is 3 years or 4 years. I think it's coming up on 3 years, but it might be four. And we will typically age half of each batch in a new barrel and half in new barrels and half in used barrels. Because, you know, malt whiskeys are traditionally, you know, the Scotch and Irish version aged in used barrels. So let's see what happens there. And of course, being malt, it's very light flavored. So I want to have something else available in case, you know, the barrel overwhelmed the light spirit. So if we do it in used barrel, the spirit's going to come up, show through more. And that's, you know, I know that because we have a corn whiskey that's aged in used barrels, and I have an idea of the impact of a used barrel on a new make spirit. So again, all the cool stuff that we do in Heaven Hill allows us to, you know, build on that knowledge, build on that legacy.
That's awesome. And one of the other things that we're going to ask about is a little bit about you. You know, how did you end up where you are? How did you get here? It's got to be a good journey, right?
It was in an amazing journey. So as I mentioned, a chemical engineer, got my degree from University College Dublin, UCD. I was hired by Pfizer Pharmaceuticals in a small town called Ringaskiddy on the south coast of Ireland, right outside of Cork. I was working for them in Ireland for about a year, not quite a year, when they asked me to go to Terre Haute, Indiana.
I'm like, where's that?
It is the middle of nowhere.
I've been there.
So it was supposed to be a 3 to 6 month assignment. And then absolutely coincidentally, I got back in touch with some friends who I had met on a train in Europe like 2 years prior to that. And as I'm getting ready to go to Terre Haute, Indiana, I wrote Sarah and said, hey, remember me? I'm going to be in Terre Haute, Indiana next week. Is that anywhere near you? She is from Louisville. And I came down, she and her husband Carl. I start coming down for the weekends. Really had a good, really enjoyed Louisville. Started to appreciate bourbon. About 4 months into this 3 to 6 month assignment from Pfizer asked me to stay. And I literally, the decision was like, I'm having so much fun over here. I'm going to stick around and quit being fun. So I ended up staying in Terre Haute for 6 years. Working for Pfizer was lucky to work with a great group of people and just really ton of cool experience there. Eventually, though, quit, rode my motorcycle across the country, ended up in Colorado, skied all winter, came back to Louisville for Kentucky Derby, met my wife. And the plan B was like, if it quits being fun, I'll go back to Dublin. And wouldn't it be cool to get a job making Guinness in Dublin? Well, once I met Kim, then I was like, well, this the Guinness thing ain't going to happen, but this bourbon thing could be fun. So I ended up getting hired by Brown-Forman in 2004. And that was before bourbon tourism had even reached. There was a couple of tours. You could do a couple of tours, but there really wasn't any bourbon tourism. The bourbon boom was still 4 or 5 years in the future before it even started thinking about starting. One good example of that is like the previous person hired into the role that I was hired into was my boss, and he'd been hired 26 years prior. So that's how slow hiring was.
Yeah, so these jobs don't open up too often.
Not at all. I just say luck of the Irish. I was in the right place at the right time. But coincidentally, most of the whiskey we were making at Brown-Forman in those days was on contract for Heaven Hill following the Heaven Hill fire of 96. So I worked for Brown-Forman in Louisville for 5 years. And then I was at Woodford for 9 years, still with Brown-Forman. I left there in 2017, joined Angel's Envy. And I'd been there for about a year and a half when Heaven Hill called about this job. And here we all are. And that was 7 years ago.
And what did you learn along the way about this whole craft of making whiskey?
I learned everything I know about making whiskey that I know today. And I still learn today. I mean, that's the great thing about it. I mean, we're growing a living organism and we're, using different grains and we're putting, the same distillate in different barrels and different warehouses and learn all that. But I think one of the first lessons I learned, you think about making whiskey, it's pretty simple. You start with grain, you mill it, mash it, ferment it, distill it, put in a barrel. Boom, easy. So here I am. I've got my chemical engineering degree. I've been working for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals for how many years? 6, 7 years. I worked for an engineering firm for a while in there too. And it's just a process. It's just pots and pans. Who cares? But my boss, with his 26 years experience, says it's going to take you at least 2 years to figure this distillery out. And I didn't scoff to his face, but inwardly I scoffed. And then
like more like 2 days.
Yeah. And literally 2 years to the day. I came to work one day and there was some minor emergency and I knew what to do. And I was like, holy shit, it's been 2 years and I'm finally starting to get this.
And you know, everything matters.
Learning every day.
Every step along the way in that process makes a difference. Even the temperature you cook it at, it makes a huge difference. And then it's like, what do you do if you burn the corn, you know?
No, hopefully you don't do that because that's going to make your whiskey taste like crap.
Yeah, you got to throw that batch out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, these things happen, you know? It's like you got to make sure. So do you guys, is part of your job going around with a drill and drilling into barrels, tasting it? Is it ready yet?
Very rarely. However, I do get plenty of samples sent my way. And they, you know, and so there's it happens very various ways. Like I'll walk past the still and stick my finger in the spirit safe and taste the new make. Oh, taste the mash. But we have an innovation panel that's, you know, there's 10 or 12 or 15 of us on it, just depending on who's there. And it's brand advocacy, it's production, it's quality control, it's the brand teams, it's finance, it's people from across who just want to be on the innovation team. And we taste samples that people have gone to the warehouse and drilled from barrel. And we're making decisions on the next Parkers, the next Old Fitz, the next innovative, whatever it might be. And then often like the high end releases and stuff like that, they will they'll send me a 375 or 200 mil sample and ask me to write tasting notes on it. So I don't spend an awful lot of time crawling around warehouses these days. I have in the past, kind of miss it to be honest with you, but our warehouse teams though, I mean, they are probably the hard. They are definitely the hardest working bunch in the company, in the business. A new barrel weighs 550 pounds, and if we're producing 500 a day, 1,000 a day, 1,500 a day, 2,000 a day, they have to put them all away.
Yeah,
they have to take them all. They take the aged whiskey out, take the aged barrels out, and send them to dump room to be dumped. It is demanding physical work around the area, you know, all year long, whether it's summer, winter, hot or cold.
Yep, that's fantastic.
We can do a whole lot of different things here, you know, as opposed to Bernheim, where they're doing, you know, 1,300, you know, 1,500 barrels a day. We're doing one barrel a day, so it's a whole lot easier for us to kind of experiment and do different things. So that's one of the things that has been a lot of fun to do. To Heaven Hill, like I say, we have our six main core styles of whiskey that we make. But here at the Bourbon Experience, I'm the artisanal distiller at the Evan Williams Bourbon Experience. So, you know, we get to make, you know, one barrel a day on pot stills by hand. Everything we do here is all by hand. You know, we make all of our cuts on the stills by hand. We, you know, dump the grain by hand. So it's truly a handmade product that we, you know, get done. But, you know, we've been tasked too with doing some innovations. So we've actually, you know, done, like I say, some very interesting experiments that we've done here. And you know, some of the mash bills that we've done have carried over to the grain to glass brands that we've come out with now. So it's been pretty interesting.